Fred.
Venice Diary.
Welcome back to Global Critics Venice Voice on Fred Film Radio. We are broadcasting live from the heart of the Venice Film Festival every day as the Lido buzzes with excitement. We dive straight into movies that everyone is talking about. I'm Rita Di Santo, the host, and today I'm with my brilliant colleagues from around the world. I'm from Turkey.
Yeah. Kerem Akça, I am from Posta newspaper.
My name is Oras Kribayev. I'm from Kazakhstan, from 98 magazine.
And then here we have our exceptional guest.
Well, you're far too kind. It's Peter Bradshaw here from The Guardian in London in the UK.
Everybody knows Peter Bradshaw.
Of course.
Okay, let's start with a movie outdoor competition, Luca Guadagnino, After the Hunt. So it's about a college professor, Julia Roberts, that must confront a dark secret from her past after one of her students make a serious accusation against a college professor and close friend of the protagonist, Alma.
Well, if you will allow me, I'll start by saying that I am a huge fan of Luca Guadagnino's, and I look forward to every one of his films the way a football fan looks forward to the World Cup final. But I have to say, I was terribly disappointed by this film. I don't know what everybody else thought. I sat down to it thinking that it was going to be a kind of Me Too campus accusation drama in the manner of, say, David Mamet or Neil Labute. I found it overlong, overwrought, kind of muddled. It perpetually held out the promise of some sensational, either a revelation or some very interesting ambiguity, but it just seemed muddled to me. I don't know what everybody, it just seemed muddled. I thought the performances, Julia Roberts and Ayo Edebiri, these are excellent actors. Michael Stuhlbarg, my goodness. I mean, who could forget Michael Stuhlbarg's great speech from Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name? I mean, that's one of the great moments of 21st century cinema. And yet here, his character seemed muddled. He seemed to do one thing and then do the other. He seemed to be a really nice, uxorious husband. And then suddenly he's having this petulant meltdown where he's stomping in and out of the kitchen, playing music far too loud like a teenager. I mean, I get it. Okay, of course, human beings can be complicated and have mood swings, but this seemed to be a function of a script that needed to be rewritten about two or three times to get it down to a proper length and to bring us a real drama. So I don't want to spoil the party on Guadagnino, because I am president of the Guadagnino fan club, but I don't know what anybody else thought, but I have to say this one left me scratching my head a little bit.
I personally wouldn't be so harsh on the movie, because I think it had a lot of great elements throughout. There were so many scenes that managed to, put a lot of tension for the audience to a huge extent through the music, through the editing, through the close-ups that they had. And I think this movie somehow manages to complement the kind of a theme that I can see at this festival, starting from, again, La Grazia by Sorrentino, the idea of the ambiguity of truth. I think this is something that Guadagnino also manages to talk about, whether we don't know who is lying, who is telling the truth, at least in the beginning of the movie. And I think this is something that the organizers of the festival managed to nicely put together throughout.
I have seen The Missing of Sayombri Moktubrom, the cinematographer. It was a great player of Guadagnino, but here it's the cinematography is very bad. It's like a TV series visually. Because of that, it's annoying for me. For Julia Roberts also, I was waiting a performance after a lot of years. But it's a very cold internal performance, and it's like trying to put the actors to another level, and it tries to be very internal and very minimalist, but it doesn't touch the people who watch it. The screenplay also, it's like a theater play for me. It was annoying from the beginning till the end. For me, I mean Andrew Garfield and Michael Sturbach are the will be memorable with out of this mess. but out of this, I mean the one of the worst movies of Guadagnino. It's not done the post production color grade was missing. And that's why Prime Video okay, but it should have been a...
I wanted to ask you something. What do you think? Why Julia Roberts is blonde? Do we need to see Julia Roberts blonde? What do you think, Peter?
I personally am delighted to see her hair in any color. She certainly signaled a great change in her personality by having short hair in the end. It's this way of telling the audience, look, 5 years have gone past, and she's got short hair. Things are new. Things are different. And without spoilers... A huge thing has happened to her job-wise, which is a great surprise to me, because she was found to have falsified pharmacists' prescription pads, which incidentally is a criminal offence. Didn't seem to have affected her career very much, did it? She's elevated at the end. And then in the final 5 minutes, we have this Heat-style confrontation between the two. It's like sort of a De Niro, Pacino confrontation between Ao and Julia in that final scene. I'm thinking, what is this about? Where are we going with this? You know, they just sort of round and round, they're kind of smirkingly squared up to each other. It's as if Guadagnino thought, well, we need to kind of settle this, we need to have some kind of resolution. But it seemed fence-sitting in the end. It seemed to be that he was scared by the very ambiguity, the very complexity that the movie had advanced, as if to say, wait, I mean, you know, of course we have to believe women, do we? I mean, what if the woman in this case is very rich and spoiled and pampered and her parents have paid for the library? Maybe we don't, maybe we believe the other guy. And that's the big crux, the big crunch, the big dilemma. And it seems to me that the film, instead of investigating this dilemma or making it dramatically alive, kind of teetered on the edge as if in a fence-sitting way, as if to say, well, I'm not sure which side we should come down on. And that whole of the last scene kind of embodied that, I think, the timidity and the fastidiousness.
But the best character is Alma's husband. What a marvelous husband he has. He understands everything. Yeah. And then he has this moment that reminds me some movies that we have seen in Cannes recently, when the husband with the loud music.
Yeah, I mean, there was a loud music scene in the Sandra Hüller movie in Cannes. Loud music scenes. Weird.
Husband sometimes they need a loud music.
Music far too loud. Could we turn the music down, please? Incidentally, I would say that to Guadagnino. The music for me was grinding through the dialogue. And also, what is with that tick, tick, tick mannerism? Yeah. That kind of time bomb thing. I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, something terrible is going to happen any moment.
Tick, tick, tick,
and then I guess not. I guess they defused the bomb because nothing interesting is happening. And then again, it was something like a tick, 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 and I think, all right, is something going to explode here or what? No. But, damn it.
But do we also need 2 hours and a half to tell, I mean, lots of interesting topics in the movie, in the story. Do we need 2 hours and a half?
I don't know. I think it's an example of the way movies are influenced by streaming TV, and I think you put your finger on it.
Yes.
Nowadays, directors and writers are thinking, do I write this as, when they have an idea for a movie, they think, is this a movie? Actually, no, maybe it's a 6-episode streamer for Amazon TV or Netflix. I get paid a lot more if it's I can imagine this being a streaming TV show. Maybe it would have been better, a streaming TV, because you could have explored the highways and the byways of these weird things. You know, she's in pain for some reason.
I think
why is she in pain?
I think in this sense it kind of reminds me of the TV series by Cuarón that was premiered here last year. Disclaimer, because it also touched on the similar topics, I think. And last year it actually benefited from the fact that it was a TV series and that it had this plot twist in the middle. Maybe again, if this movie, After the Hunt, could have been prolonged, actually, and had more space to discuss certain things.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think it might have made more sense.
Disclaimer is more cinematographically memorable. And it is planned as a TV series, it has worked. You can see that it has worked. from the beginning till the end. Because of the Cuarón maybe, but Guadagnino is also author. But this is maybe radio theater also, it can be. So, yeah. Because only talking without visuality.
I thought so. I mean, maybe
is another.
There's a lot of talking in it. There's a lot of, which I don't have a problem with at all. I love talky movies. People talking, just talking, interestingly, can be good. And I had to say, there are moments where I was interested in the philosophy seminars, where they were talking about the passage in I think, the Odyssey, where Ulysses hears his own exploits sung by the blind poet. And the consensus of opinion in the seminar is that we only believe our experiences to be real when somebody else recounts them. And I thought that was an interesting scene. I didn't have a problem with the digressive nature of it. But as I say, there was another scene where Julia Roberts puts the smack down on a woke student. And I say, look, Cate Blanchett's done that already in Tar. And she did it and she did it a lot better, incidentally. When she puts the smack down on you, you stay down. Whereas Julia Roberts, I thought, kind of, I don't know, she was just cross. And I think when Cate Blanchett did it, she was kind of contentious and dismissive. And I think she did that sort of thing more and more effectively.
I hope Luca will never listen to this talk, because he will smash the mobile phone or radio, anything, like Alma in the movie.
Oh, I don't think he would.
I will run to watch the next movie of Luca, because I really love what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
And not everything can be perfect.
No, but I think he's great.
Okay, great. Let's move on. And so, South Korean filmmaker Park Chan-wook, maybe you heard this name, for Old Boy and the Unmade, is back in Venice with the movie No Other Choice. Don't ask me to tell the original title.
No.
Can you read the original title? No. Okay, so it's a crazy dark comedy. And is a satire of modern workplace culture and ruthless desperation and employment. A man fired from his job after 25 years has to find a new job, and he comes with a crazy plan. We love him, do we?
I do. I don't know what everybody thinks. I'm a huge fan of Park Chan-wook, and I wasn't sure at first what to make of this movie, but it grew on me. It really grew on me. It's the best, for me, it's my favorite in the competition so far. I thought at first it was going to be a wacky caper, a comedy, like maybe like the old British Ealing Studios used to make, because I thought, oh, I get it. He's going to kill seven people to create seven job vacancies. And it doesn't matter if some of them are unemployed, because it just reduces the competition. And it's a bit like Kind Hearts and Coronets, the protagonist of that going through murdering people so he can get what he wants. And in a way, that's what it like. I thought that the movie, because I knew nothing about it, I didn't know about the Costa Gavras version that came out 20 years ago or the original novel. So I came to it completely new. And I thought it was going to systematically go through those seven people, and it was going to be chaotic and mad, and he was going to kill them in various ways. But that's not what happens. It's more digressive and weird than that. He stalls in the first one or two, and then the movie says, actually, you know what? That's not what it's about. It's about his family dysfunction. It's about what we now think of as fragile masculinity, and his salaryman shame, and his sense of emasculation that he's not providing for his family. And then other things happen, and you realize, actually, no, his father was in this same house because it's a childhood home, and something terrible happened to his father, who was a pig farmer. So maybe it's actually not about this at all. Maybe it's about his father. And then his daughter turns out to be this, is a cello prodigy who can never quite play any music for them, but can only practice, and his son gets into trouble for stealing mobile phones. So Park has this amazing confidence just to sort of set the train going down the track, and then, you know what, let's go off and investigate something else. Let's have a big dream scene in the greenhouse where he sees his son, or his son sees him in this bonsai tree. And I thought it was great. And by the end, I thought it was just like a kind of surrealist poem in the end about all these ideas and themes. So I'm not saying it's Park's masterpiece, but it's certainly a very handsomely made, confident movie.
I think it jumps on the, not trend, but a very important theme in many of the South Korean movies about the fact that now fewer and fewer people can afford to live in houses, have good salaries, right, generally enjoy their lives. And I think, again, from Parasite to many other movies that didn't make it to the Oscars, it's been a very important theme throughout. I think that Park Chan-wook manages to encapsulate it very well, as you've said. The other thought I had, again, trying to kind of make a big picture of the entire program, is that this is already like the fourth or fifth movie about the male depression in like going through the middle-age crisis or something like this, or the crisis before the end of his career. Again, start with Lagrazze, with Bugonia, and many, many other movies that we've seen so far. So I think, again, this may be some kind of a new trend that so far, if previous years we've mostly seen the movies by that focused on female problems, this year it's mostly men.
Right, right.
I think it's a little bit bulky for me, the movie. Park Chan-wook, I like mostly his late career, of course. Vengeance trilogy is memorable as masterpieces. But after his late career, I think Little Drummer Girl and Sympathy, that kind of miniseries are more dynamic and original for me, and this one is a little bit bulky for me. It felt for me as a, it should have been a more online series from the beginning till the end. Because of that, it's looked bulky for me, and as a team also, I thought it's the team is he used that kind of vengeance and other teams before, so that doesn't embarrass me.
Yeah, but it's incredible. There is one moment in the movie that I felt okay, where are we? It's like breaks the boundary of cinema in an incredible way. Again, with loud music. And it's so incredibly crazy and inventive.
I think so.
You know which moment I'm talking about. No, we are not going to say anything about it because it's really an incredible moment.
Yeah, there are so many. And like a lot of South Korean cinema, I think, has a tendency to kind of knock about almost slapstick violence and craziness.
Oh, yeah.
and kind of knock about comedy. Even in the darkest moments, suddenly we can segue into wacky comedy, and sometimes I think, oh, well, that's a bit weird. But when it works, I think it works really well. It has the effect of perplexing you, not trying to make you laugh, as if the generic shift or the tonal pivot has kind of created something else. It's fused with something else to create a kind of weird tonal fusion that you don't quite know how to deal with. And I rightly or wrongly, I associate that with Korean cinema, a lot of Korean cinema.
Yeah, we have just one other title, very quickly, one word if you have, about Valérie Donzelli at Work. It's again a writer who struggles with poverty.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting movie. I'm not sure whether I believed in it for a single moment, but there was some interesting stuff about the gig economy. But the scene in the end where he hands over his notebooks in writing to the publisher. Really? He doesn't type them up himself? He doesn't have an agent? I mean, I don't know. I don't know the original novel by Frank Gourmet, but please, I'm not sure I believe it for a single moment. But interesting things about the gig economy. So I
know also some Uber drivers that they really enjoy their job,
yeah,
and they earn a lot. So it's not a bad work. Sometimes as a critic, I think maybe I should do another job. I thought, at some point, maybe I can be an Uber driver. I will enjoy so much talking with people. It's not only
maybe we all will one day. Maybe we'll be glad of the work, guys. We all get fired.
Yeah. It wasn't a success for me also.
Okay, let's do thumbs up and thumbs down.
Okay.
Yesterday, we have one title left from yesterday,
okay,
that we have four thumbs up. So we do again, we put the title again today.
Mm-hmm.
But let's start from the first. Even if it's out of competition, After the Hunt, Luca Guadagnino. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
To me, this is thumbs up.
Please show me so I can. One,
thumbs down.
Two,
down.
Three
thumbs down.
And three down, down, one up. Okay.
Okay.
And no other choice.
No other choice for me. Thumbs up.
Down.
Three threes up and one down.
Yeah.
And then Donzelli.
Donzelli, kind of wobbling,
okay.
Kind of wobbling, maybe a little bit low. I don't want to give it a thumbs down. Some interesting things. My thumb is wobbling.
Okay, one wobbling, three down. Okay, and yesterday we have La Grazia. I'll keep my thumbs up. Any thumbs up or down?
Thumbs up for me.
Thumbs up. La Grazia down.
Oh, three thumbs up and one
thumbs
down.
Up.
Okay. Thank you so much. Hope to
Thank
see you,
you
again in the next few days.
Yeah. Love to. Yeah. Love to.
Of course.
Likewise.
Like to be there here again.
Bye.
Fred. 24/7 on Fred FM and smartphone app.